This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block. Whisk back in culinary time, from Nigella Lawson, through Julia Child, and way back past Escoffier, and give a deep tip of the chef's toque to Antonin Carême, a man who's billed as the first celebrity chef. He made his fame in the early 19th century, cooking for royalty and the very, very rich. He baked Napoleon's wedding cake, dazzled Britain's future King George IV at the Brighton Pavilion. He created masterpieces for the Romanovs in St. Petersburg and soufflés flecked with real gold for the Rothschilds in Paris. Carême grew famous, too, through his cookbooks published in Paris. Well, now Antonin Carême is getting an infusion of new life through a British actor and writer named Ian Kelly. He's written a biography of the great French chef called Cooking for Kings. And as we meet Ian Kelly one morning in New York, he's turning his attention to a large cardboard box that's arrived by mail.
So in here we have, I hope, America's finest rooster testicles.
Kelly's going to prepare a dinner for friends using Carême's recipes, and rooster testicles are indeed one of the ingredients.
Here they are. They are, however, in fact, duck testicles. But you can't have everything, can
And they,
you?
They euphemistically call them duck fries.
Duck fries. There we go. An embarrassing wealth of maleness there. Okay, into the freezer with this.
The private duck bits, along with other unmentionables, will be carefully folded into one of Antonin Carême's creations, the delicate pastries called vol-au-vent à la nelle.
He talks about the vol-au-vent as pastry so light that it flies out of the oven. It's flight on the wind. It's a very romantic idea. He's a fascinating character, Carême, in terms of his attachment to the poetry of cooking, whilst at the same time acknowledging just the harsh grind of it all. It's incredibly hard work, and very often for the ungrateful. And Carême is right on that knife edge, and very aware of it.
Carême came to cooking in a completely random way. It was not something that he was predestined to do. It was a fluke.
Well, it was. It's an amazing story, but true, that in 1792, during the height of the terror in Paris, just after the revolution, terrible times, Carême, as a 9 or 10 year old, was abandoned by his parents, and he was taken in by a cook and given bed and board in exchange for basic kitchen work. So yes, he wandered, as it were, into cooking, but then rose very, very fast. By 17 or 18, he was one of the major pastry chefs of Paris at a time when pastry was terribly fashionable. The thing to do in France in the late 18th, early 19th century was to create pastry, in particular pastry which wouldn't look like pastry, sugar work and spun sugar and creating things which weren't even necessarily edible but looked fabulous. And this was Carême's first taste of fame, was as a man who could recreate obelisks and Gothic ruins, and Napoleon had just captured the pyramids, and he recreated the pyramids in pastry and nougat and meringue and marzipan, and this was his big thing. And he was spotted by Talleyrand, the politician, who survived all the revolutions of France of the period, always managed to come out on top, and was a great gourmet, and he headhunted Carême to come and cook for him.
Works for Talleyrand in France, and then it's a series of, from one world leader to another. He goes to Britain, he's in St. Petersburg.
It's extraordinary. Part of what I loved about the story when I first came across it was this sort of Forrest Gump quality to Carême, or Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, or whatever. He's just off stage of these incredible events. When Napoleon and Josephine's marriage is falling apart, he's cooking in the kitchens. When the Princess of Wales dies suddenly in 1817 in England, he's cooking at the Brighton Pavilion. And Carême's always there. He's very canny like that. I think he learned a lot from Talleyrand of just making sure he was in the right place at the right time. For the next Sundays, Anna, I think maybe we'll get an electric whisk.
across Manhattan now, a small dressing room at a Midtown theater. Ian Kelly is whisking cream as he races to get ready for today's matinee. He plays Carême on stage in a one-man play he's written himself. The whipped cream will fill dozens of pastry swans, a favorite of Napoleon's Empress Josephine, that'll be given out to the audience after the show.
That's clogs.
Kelly's costume, a pair of chef's clogs, a white chef's jacket, an apron lashed tightly around his waist, and tugged down over his red hair, the chef's hat that Antonin Carême himself is credited with inventing. 50 seats for the audience, arranged around a cook's steel trolley. Copper pots, battered wooden spoons, and sieves hang overhead.
7 a.m., and a hush descends on the great kitchen of the Brighton Pavilion. The scullery maids curtsy, the French and German girls, with suitable deference, I note, the English girls somewhat sullenly.
For Ian Kelly, this chef of drama and spectacle is perfect for the stage.
That was Carême's style. He was a man of the theatre and a sort of a stage architect as much as he was a chef, because that was how it had to be. You had to be able to create these wonderful moments and then move on.
It's remarkable to see these menus that he seems to scrupulously keep track of. And this is one of the menus that he describes for a meal that he cooks in 1817, and it goes on for pages and pages.
Pages and pages. There are 137 different dishes, 8 soups, just to begin with, 8 relevés de poisson, a sort of relay course of fishes, 8 roasts, 8 trays of hot soufflés, 32 entremets, which are, as it were, side dishes, of which 16 are cold desserts, but a full 40 entrees. 40 entrees, all to be served hot, all to everybody, though by then they'll be as drunk as lords and fed like kings, because, well, they are. And towering over it all, 8 extraordinaires, 8 temples to our craft and to the glory of eating. An Italian sugar Belvedere, 4 feet tall. A Russian hermitage, a Grecian temple, the Colosseum. A galleon in full sail, the Prince of Wales feathers, a romantic ruin of a Welsh cottage, the Brighton Pavilion itself. All of them made from molten sugar.
Someone calls him the Palladio of patisserie.
Yes, Carême. He was very keen on his various nicknames, the King of Cooks, the Cook of Kings, the Palladio of patisserie, yeah. He was enjoying, it was said by his death, an Olympian fame. He was the first great figure of gastronomy. He's an artisan, passionate about food, but also a man who has an epic life at an epic period of world history.
An epic life and a death at age 49. Antonin Carême's death in 1833 brought on, it's thought, from low-level carbon monoxide poisoning, the result of a lifetime spent below ground cooking over charcoal.
So, he raised his glass instead to a new French emperor. Me, the King of Cooks, the Cook of Kings.
Ian Kelly's biography of Antonin Carême and his one-man play, being staged in New York, are both called Cooking for Kings. There are recipes and illustrations by Antonin Carême at our website, npr.org.